Show. Head on to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, welcome to the first day of August 2014, Friday on the front porch, on the horn. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to find the access to the chat room. It's also where you go to find the ever-present, ever-necessary PayPal button, which is how we keep things going here. The PayPal button is critical to our continued existence, and has been for eons now. Nobody's selling anything here. We don't have any. Bose Wave radios or vacuum cleaners that'll pick bowling balls up off of Swedish mattresses. We merely have the determination of a group of committed people who want to see independent broadcasting persist. We ended the month of July, not as well as I would like to have ended the month of July. We're starting August in a hole. But that's okay. Hopefully we will fill that in because we had, just to get this part taken care of. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We had two challenges on the table. Yesterday, the 31st of July, turned out, according to our good friend Thomas, Jug a Punch in the chat room, he noticed that legendary actor Ted Cassidy, known for a number of different roles, but very tall and a very much gifted individual, good basketball player among other things, was born in the Pittsburgh area some years back on July the 31st, and then I noticed that he was raised in, well, how do you do, West Virginia. Naturally, Mr. Cassidy, in order to make something of himself, rapidly exited West Virginia at the earliest opportunity. But at any rate, Thomas suggested a challenge for the 31st of July when I wasn't here, and I'll explain that in a moment. Thomas suggested a lurch away from the hole challenge because Ted Cassidy on the Addams Family TV series played Lurch. Yes. So yesterday should have been the Lurch Away from the Hole Thursday challenge as offered by our good friend and supporter of longstanding Thomas. Who wasn't here, though. Now, this is the first day of August, which means two things. One, that our good friend Randy was first one under the wire, past the post, however you wish to express it, with his contribution. Thank you, Randy. Thank you very kindly. Randy makes a point of being the first in at the first of the month. It also means that Shirley is standing by with Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So, what does that mean? That means there is $250 of matching offers on the table this evening. In other words, $250 worth of offers to double your money. $250 worth of offers to turn your 5 into 10, your 10 into 20, your 20 into 40, all the way up to $250. Okay? That's a whale of an opportunity, and I hope people will take advantage of it, because we can't be getting behind at the very beginning of the month. Look, for these many, many years now, we have operated from month to month. And we're going to keep operating that way, I suppose, from month to month. So there you go. $250 worth of challenges is not to be sneezed at. $250 worth of willingness to double your money is not to be taken lightly. So the PayPal button, or if you want to go to the contribute page, you will find also on that page the traditional mail address if you wish to participate via the United States Postal Service. That address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower, you know, the President, Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with a gentle reminder not to make checks or money orders payable to Bob Kincaid, but rather to make them payable to Head On Communications or The Horn. That way, Boss Man Wayne doesn't have any trouble negotiating them into our bill-paying account. And lots of bill-paying there always is to do. We try to raise, based on the number of days in any given month, we try to raise $150 per evening. And that's where we stand, except for the fact that we finished July not having done that. Now, I announced on Tuesday evening where I would be Wednesday and Thursday. Apparently, some folks didn't get the Tuesday file download or weren't listening live, so let me just explain. When you live in a rural area like West Virginia, things like doctoring and medical care are often a bit of a drive away. There aren't any specialists within easy reach of here where we live. And so Agnes had doctoring that had to be done that took up Wednesday and Thursday. I tried to make it back in time for showtime, airtime, program time last night, but it simply was not possible, because when your appointment is at noon and they get you into an examining room at 1 and the doctor shows up at 2 and then you sit some more and the next doctor shows up at 2:45 and you're finally out of there by 3:15, well, it wasn't going to happen. So that's how that worked out, because this is West Virginia, and it's rural country, and that's just our reality. Now, what else? There is a possibility of my being away from the microphone Monday and or Tuesday. I'm not saying it's a 100% chance, but I don't know what percentage to assign to it. There are things going on, stuff that I'm doing, that may or may not require me to be not behind the microphone by airtime on Monday, thus making the $250 challenge that's on the table this evening all the more important if we're to keep things going. Okay. I want to thank Sal and Asa for jumping in early on the lurch away from the whole July challenge. We'll take that first before we go to Shirley's. Thank you very much. Sal and Asa have doubled the value of their contribution, and so there is $225 now remaining in the two challenges this evening. There is $75 remaining in the lurch away from the whole Ted Cassidy end of July challenge. Okie dokie. Now, where do we go? Where do we go this evening? A little bit of an update, shall we? I've got some news to announce. The Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, the AIC campaign, which you guys know more about than just about anyone else on the planet, alongside Cold River Mountain Watch, comprised of the hardest working, bravest people I know, have filed a legal action. And that legal action centers on something we recently learned about the United States Geological Survey. The USGS has done a good bit of research and data gathering in the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone. They even have an article waiting that's been ready for publication for quite some time now, but mysteriously has not shown up. Moreover, last week we learned that the United States Geological Survey quietly had its funding for mountaintop removal-based research, or oriented research, disappeared, pulled. The way Ken Ward explained it in, and by the way, what do we got to do to get Ken Ward a Pulitzer Prize? Please, anybody, tell me. This guy is doing amazing work. He is a journalist of the old school, and he deserves more recognition than he is getting. Being a journalist, I think he would probably trade the recognition for more cash, because journalism is still not a lucrative profession, and anyone who has ever done it can tell you as much. But he deserves a ton of recognition for the good work he has done over the years, especially as relating to mountaintop removal. That is not to say that he is a cheerleader for my side or the other side. It just means he's a damned good journalist. And he reported last week that the Obama administration quietly pulled the funding for mountaintop removal-oriented research by the United States Geological Survey. The scientists who had been doing the MTR-oriented research were retasked and repurposed to go and work on fracking. This is not to say that fracking research does not need to be done, because it does. On the other hand, we badly need to identify and further expand upon the knowledge base of what is going on and why people are so sick, so very, very sick, in the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone. And so, in conjunction with legal allies that we have, the APE Campaign and Cold River Mountain Watch have filed a FOIA trying to find out how that process took place whereby funding was yanked from desperately needed research. Now, let's be clear, okay? Let's be very, very clear on this topic. The Republican House of Representatives and the entirely dysfunctional Congress generally did not do this. Now, perhaps the sequester had something to do with it, but do please let's remember that the sequester was something that was entered into by multiple parties, by multiple branches of the government, i.e. the executive branch, as headed by President Obama, and the Senate, and the House. And in this case, as far as Ken Ward's reporting indicates, President Obama's administration is the one that said, "Oh, what are y'all doing, wasting so much time wondering why them hillbillies are getting sick? We've been killing them off for 150 years, and we ain't finished them off yet, so there ain't no reason to go researching on why it is the hillbillies is sick down there next to where they get the snot blasted out of their land all the time." Just to be clear. So, we will, technically speaking, in a FOIA, the respondent has 20 days in which to respond, so in maybe about 20 days we'll have some sort of news, but that news may very well be that they're obfuscating and pleading for another 10 days, and saying that the dog ate it and they can't find it. And what's that girl? Little Timmy's down a well. That kind of thing. All I can say is I'll update you when I know. And it is a rather brutal day in almost level West by God, Virginia. Or it is deemed to be a brutal day if you happen to be one of 1,100 Alpha Natural Resources employees. You may recall that Alpha Natural Resources is the successor in interest, as the lawyers like to say, to a little outfit called Massey Energy that used to be run by a nasty, 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 vile, hateful, brutal, icky human being by the name of Don Blankenship. Don Blankenship was the head of Massey Energy back when he was sending out memos that said, work like you mean it. If you ain't moving coal, you ain't working. We ain't got no time for none of this gall-dang safety business. He wrote that memo right before an accident killed a couple of guys in a fire at the Aracoma mine. And then shortly after that, along came a little place that nobody knew anything about until something happened, and then suddenly all of America knew about the Upper Big Branch mine, which blew up and incinerated 29 human beings so badly that they could not be, their remains could not be identified as the remains of human beings. That Don Blankenship, that Massey, that Alpha. They're laying off 1,100 people. Now, are they laying off 1,100 people because of the tenacious, never-say-die efforts of consensus-based decision-making tree-huggers and environmentalists? Are they? No, not so much. Those 1,100 people are being laid off because of, one, cynical politics. And two, because of what we might refer to as market forces. Mm-hmm. Otherwise known as economics. Now, they weren't just laid off, done. No. The way the law works is you issue layoff notices. And so, in this particular instance, the layoff notices have been issued for about October 2014. So this would be, what, a 60, 90-day notice, something like that? Somebody do the math. Alpha Natural Resources, in fact, issued a press release. Mm-hmm. Here's what they said. Continuing weak markets, current and impending EPA regulations weigh on Central Appalachian operations. 1,100 jobs at risk. 8 operating affiliates of Alpha Natural Resources, Inc. I'm surprised they weren't called associates. That means the dummy corporations that do the mining of coal to provide a layer of liability insulation to the real thugs and monsters in the CEO and board offices of Alpha. I mean, let's say, for instance, that a mine that is technically and legally owned by Dumbasses with Dynamite Mining Incorporated, LLC, blows up. Well, if people who are harmed by that explosion then try to sue Alpha, Alpha will say, well, that ain't our fault. That's old Dumbasses with Dynamite Mining. Blame them. And, of course, by then, Dumbasses with Dynamite Mining have declared bankruptcy and, whoops, well, Gee, we're sorry we incinerated your loved ones. We ain't got no money. Meanwhile, the CEO of Alpha looks over and goes, well, I'll be danged. Look at all of that money in that bag from dumbasses with dynamite mining. Wonder how that got there. So that's what I mean when they mean eight affiliates of Alpha Natural Resources, Inc. By the way, if you want to see how Alpha Natural Resources is doing, their New York Stock Exchange three-letter designation is ANR. If you ever wanted to see something, I mean, even let's say Alpha Natural Resources was in the marshmallow mining business and they weren't poisoning communities near where they operate, go look at their stock price. Yeah, no, I wouldn't touch it. Eight operating affiliates of Alpha Natural Resources, Inc. have notified their employees late this afternoon, meaning yesterday, that the coal mines and other facilities where they work are subject to being idled, due to sustained weak market conditions and government regulations that have challenged the entire... The entire Central Appalachian mining industry. Right. In accordance with requirements of the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification, otherwise known as WARN Act, notice has been given today to approximately 1,100 employees at 11 Alpha-affiliated surface mines in West Virginia, as well as preparation plants and other support operations, advising them of the expected idling of those facilities based on Alpha's current assessment of market conditions. And then it gives the name of the outfits. While no reductions in force are occurring immediately at these sites, they are currently planned to take place by mid-October. What they don't add there is, parenthetically, conveniently timed right next to the upcoming November midterm elections. Because that's what this is. Yeah. And then this. These actions are being triggered by persistent weakness in U.S. and overseas coal demand and depressed price levels, along with government regulations that are causing electric utilities to close coal-fired power plants and forego new construction. Excess supply of coal worldwide also has contributed to falling coal prices. Oh, wait a minute. They just kind of snuck that one in, didn't they? In other words, it's become too expensive. Screw the regulations. It has become too expensive to mine coal in Central Appalachia. And here's what's interesting about that. It's not because they're being choked to death by the unions, because Alpha is almost exclusively and entirely non-union. Oh, there's a little handful left, but not much. So, if it's not labor, and it's not tree huggers, and believe me, it's not us. I mean, you want to talk about ineffective? I mean, I'm one, but I'm an honest and realistic one, and wow, are we ineffective! We have meetings that last a day to determine what the date should be, to have another meeting, to set the agenda for a meeting, to determine whether or not we ought to have an action based upon a yet-to-be-determined meeting. And that's just, I mean, I'm just telling the truth. It takes 3 weeks of conference calls to decide what to get on a carry-out pizza. So it's not us. No, it is. Excess supply of coal worldwide has also contributed to falling coal prices. So that means maybe it's a little cheaper to get coal from some blasted into perdition hole in the ground in, say, hi Robert, New South Wales, than it is to get it all the way around the planet to China. A little shorter distance between New South Wales and China than, say, Norfolk, Virginia and China. You know what I mean? Yeah. Excess supply of coal worldwide has also contributed to falling market coal prices. Excess supply. That means the dummies in the coal industry are digging it for all they're worth without thinking about whether or not there's anybody to buy it. Meanwhile, China, Europe, North America, we're talking about the, anybody? Northern Hemisphere. And in a world in which the climate is changing and temperatures are constantly rising, there probably hasn't been that much demand for coal-fired electricity as compared with, say, the dead of winter. See? On the other hand, these guys will be laid off in November until they go to the polls and vote the right way in November, and then they'll be called back to work because winter will be upon us and there won't be a press release blaming the EPA for that. No, they'll just be quietly called back to work, knowing that their work has been done and that all is as it should be. Cynical bastards. The international price of coal shipped to power plants in Europe has been hovering at a four-year low, while prices for metallurgical coal used to make steel have declined more than 20% in less than a year, reflective of oversupplied markets. In other words, oops, we, the coal producers, screwed up. We dug and we gouged and we scraped and we blasted and we poisoned for all we were worth, and now we're just going to sell off our stockpiles. And that doesn't cost us anything, so you fellas just sit home and watch yourself a little football. I mean, Mountaineer season's coming, and, well, maybe the Mounties won't. And, you know, Thundering Herd, too. I mean, you know, maybe they won't be a collective 0-12 by mid-October. That's possible. But just watch and find out, and we'll get you back to work as quick as you've gone to the polls and done the right thing. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You know what I mean? The right thing, the right wing thing. God, why do we have to explain it so... Oh, well. Meanwhile, in the last, 6 years, those exports that they said are down, well, exports have doubled since 2006. You ever get the sense that somebody out there's not telling the truth? It ain't me. Enter Alpha President Paul Vining. Many mines in the region have done a great job finding ways to reduce costs and remain economically viable in this unprecedented business climate, but some central Appalachia mines haven't been able to keep up with the fast pace at which coal demand has eroded and prices have fallen. Wow. Is that a little oxymoronic? Have not been able to keep up with the fast pace at which coal demand has eroded and prices have fallen. How exactly does one do that?
So our operations managers have to take a hard and serious examination whether they can sustain a number of mines and related operations by finding additional cost reductions and whether the business will be there to support them in the year ahead. In other words, we've made a ton of money. Really, we have. I mean, We could burn down every last herd of elephants on the planet with sopping wet $1,000 bills and still be rich. So we're going to let the workers take it on the chin. Isn't that what workers are for anyway? I mean, that if they weren't workers, that it wouldn't be happening to them. And, well, if God had wanted them to be rich people like us, he wouldn't have made them workers now, would he? Industry forecasts for 2015 indicate that coal production from Central Appalachia will be less than half the region's output in 2009. A major contributor to the demand erosion has been competition from natural gas as an alternate fuel for electricity generation in the U.S., along with competition from other coal-producing basins. Additionally, EPA regulations are at least partly responsible for more than 360 coal-fired electric generating units in the U.S. closing or switching to natural gas. Not the emissions regulations on CO2, they aren't, because they're not in effect yet.
Central Appalachian coal has been the biggest loser from EPA's actions. So there is much,
weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth in central Appalachia today. Oh, Jeebus. I mean, the coal... And on the one hand, you want to feel sorry for them. You do. On the other hand, they're participating in an industry that's poisoning people I love and like and care about and don't even know. So it's kind of hard to get worked up for them. Did anybody, really? I'm just asking. Did anybody put a gun to their heads and say, oh, listen, you're going to go work in the coal industry. Now, it's a dying industry, but you're going to work in it, and we're going to make you go out and buy you a new pick-em-up truck every 5 years. Every 2 years, we're going to make you go and buy a new four-wheeler for your boy. And every year, we're going to make you go out and buy new bulbs for your wife's tanning bed. We're going to make you do that. Now, don't you make us warn you a second time? No, of course not. These are people who simply got sucked up into a multi-generational mono-economic trap. And they didn't get out when the getting was good. They stayed in the market too long. It's pitiful. It really, really is pitiful. But there's all kinds of interesting data out there. A report has come out from the U.S. Department of Energy. Coal production in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky is expected to drop by half by the end of this decade, down to roughly 75 million tons per year, from a high of about 180. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with the EPA. It doesn't have anything to do with tree huggers. It has to do with the fact that these rapacious bastard coal companies have already gotten most of it. The good stuff is gone. So that they're left blasting mountaintops over communities, poisoning families, poisoning children, poisoning our elders, poisoning moms and dads and aunts and uncles and kitties and cousins to get at seams of coal that are sometimes 6 inches thick. And thus far, it has been profitable to them because they have transitioned away from actually mining coal in such a way as to put a lot of people to work, and instead using mechanized forces that utilize very few human beings, make a horrible mess for which they are not held responsible, and externalizing the costs onto the state. They pay, relatively speaking, some taxes, the coal industry. Unfortunately, by the time you start counting externalities, as Dr. Michael Hendricks did, you find out that for every dollar that coal brings into the state of West Virginia, we spend five. Now, I don't know how many people have ever sat at, say, a blackjack table in Vegas or a roulette wheel or craps table, but if you win a dollar every time you lose five, you're not winning. You're not winning. You're losing. And West Virginia is, in fact, losing. Coal is being left behind. And the larger question then is, what do we do about that? Because even if I have a fundamental philosophical disagreement with the people who are poisoning my friends and my neighbors and my families, I'd like to see them be able someday to transition into jobs where they're not poisoning anybody's family in order to pay for the truck and the four-wheeler and the tanning bulb beds. Tanning bed bulbs. Sorry. And guess what? It's going to happen. The question is whether or not a state like West Virginia will have the stones or the nerve to have it happen here. The World Energy Outlook for 2013, talking about energy consumption up into the 2030s, says, the power sector adjusts to a new life. It kind of reads like a prophecy or a forecast. I guess that's why it's an outlook. The power sector adjusts to a new life with wind and solar. See, this is, hey, Brother Albert, are you out there? I don't know. I know you're very, very busy. But this is one of those moments when Brother Albert, our prophet of the Star Trek future, not the Mad Max one, would be grinning from ear to ear. The power sector adjusts, and this is, again, between now and the 2030s. The power sector adjusts to a new life with wind and solar renewables, accounting for nearly half of the increase in global power generation to 2035, with variable sources, wind and solar photovoltaics, making up 45% of the expansion in renewables. Get out the brass band. Call them up. Polish the buttons. Spiffy up the uniforms. Get the funny hats. And get them marching. Well, and then there's the downside. No, it's not really a downside. It's just it's reflective of world demographics. China sees the biggest absolute increase in generation from renewable sources. More than the increase in the European Union, the United States, and Japan combined. In some markets, the rising share of variable renewables creates challenges in the power sector, raising fundamental questions about current market design. What? Current market design? You mean the market's designed? It's not just some sort of organic thing with an unseen hand that writes and having writ moves on? You mean it's deliberate? It's intentional? I wonder who else has talked about an intentional market design. Oh, hi, Carl. You're still right. No, you are. Yeah, you too, Friedrich Engels, you're still right. It's got to be gratifying, I know. In some markets, the rising share of variable renewables creates challenges in the power sector, raising fundamental questions about current market design and its ability to ensure adequate investment and long-term reliability of supply. The increase in generation from renewables takes its share in the global power mix above 30%, drawing ahead of natural gas in the next few years and all but reaching coal as the leading fuel for power generation in 2035. Oh, if Brother Albert's listening, he probably can't call because he's blotting away tears from his eyes and sniffling a little bit with the joy of it all. And I'm not being smartass. It's coming. The future is coming. The question is whether a place like Central Appalachia, West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, Western Virginia, East Tennessee, and the coal country down in Alabama, and the coal country in Southern Illinois. The question is whether or not we will embrace that future or be left choking on the past's dust. And, of course, that larger question is a question for the United States to answer, as a nation, as a polity. What was it the other day? Was it Tuesday? Yeah, it was Tuesday with the Green News Report when Brad and Desi had the story of how the oil industry are going to start using sonic cannons to search for oil under the seafloor. Screw the dolphins. Screw the whales. Not like they're making us any money anyway. The current rate of construction of nuclear power plants has been slowed by reviews of safety regulations, but output from nuclear eventually increases by two-thirds, led by China, Korea, India, and Russia. That's reassuring. Widespread deployment of carbon capture and storage technology would be a way to accelerate the anticipated decline in the CO2 emissions intensity of the power sector, but in our projections, only around 1% of global fossil fuel-fired power plants are equipped with CCS by 2035. You know why that is? Because CCS is imaginary. Because the best way to capture and store carbon is to leave it in the ground where it already is. Because to release already stored, trapped carbon and then try to chase down the carbon and recapture it and put it back in the ground is really a technology that isn't fully deployed it's neither fully deployed nor fully deployable because it is imaginary. How are you going to store that carbon dioxide under the earth and make sure it never comes bubbling out? The earth's crust is a surprisingly porous thing. And if I recall my high school passing fancy with Boyle's gas laws, if you pump gas underground, you know what the first thing the gas is going to start doing, almost as if it has a will of its own? Trying to go somewhere else. Because it's a gas. And trying to just expand and expand and expand and expand. What human technology do we have to stop that? Wouldn't it make just a heck of a lot more sense to take the money that we're throwing down the carbon capture and storage toxic rat hole and pump it into figuring out grid 2.0? Well, screw grid 2.0, grid 3.0. Right? So that we've got a distributed grid of millions of homes with solar panels and wind turbines, and the idea of the power going out in an individual home and all the food in the freezer spoiling and all, just becomes one of those tales that people like me, who by then, with any luck at all, will be old people, will sit there and tell the grandkids and the great-grandkiddies around the Thanksgiving dinner table, "Kids, did I ever tell you about the time when the power went out, when the derecho blew through?" Because they'll have me at the children's table at Thanksgiving by then. You know this, right? And the little grandbaby, "Oh, no, not that. Oh, Opa, please. It's all you ever talk about." "Hey, did I ever tell you that I used to talk a lot?" "Yes. You've given us all our own individual neck drives with every program you ever did on it." "Would you ever listen to any of them?" "No." "Oh, okay. I talked about you a lot." "I did. I talked about how I couldn't wait until you guys came along and we made you that happy Star Trek future." "Oh, come on, Z-Borg. Let's go play 6 inches above the yard in the hovercraft. He's going to start talking about the future again." But the fact of the matter is, by 2035, the leading source of power in this world, on this planet, if we have not ruined it for ourselves quite yet, will be what it should have been all along. The two resources that are, for all intents and purposes, utterly inexhaustible on this planet: the sun and the wind. Let's take a quick run to the email bag. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Once again, and this goes back to my remarks regarding the Obama administration quietly disappearing the funding for the mountaintop removal research by the USGS. Wonder why you'd do that. Oh, maybe some coal-fired Democrats got to him? Let's see. Who did the senior senator? Who was the senior senator from Illinois when Barack Hussein Obama was the junior senator from Illinois? Oh, Dick Durbin. Dick Durbin's a friend of Cole. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. Then, of course, there's little Joey Manchin. Yeah. And my congressman, Nick Rahal, who has almost more seniority than just about anybody else in the House of Representatives. He's been there, 38 years? Yeah. Any of those could get through to that one. And hey, Barack, listen, everybody knows that mountaintop removal's toxic. What do you got to be doing this for? We know we're poisoning. We know we're poisoning people, and we're okay with it, Barack. You should be too. The Scots-Irish borderers would not have been sent in here in the first place had we thought that their miserable lives were worth anything anyway. Every time we have a war, they line up to go and get shot. And the USGS is worried that we're poisoning them a little bit? Okay, a lot. And then there goes the funding. Well, Ron in Raleigh says, once again, President not sure is robbing Peter to pay Paul. I am so done with this guy. Mm-hmm. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. 2 days of summer. Just an FYI. We've just had 2 days of summer here in Sydney in the middle of winter. Clear blue skies, temperatures in the low to mid-20s, around 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And then last night it all reversed and it's cold again. Now it's 50 Fahrenheit. Ain't nothing quite what it ought to be anymore, is it? But speaking of Australia, this. Our buddy the Angry Indian sent this along to me. It's audio, so there's not much I can do with it here. But damn, it's fascinating. You know, every time they get ready to blow a mountain to perdition, they have to do a site survey to make sure that there are in compliance with federal law, to make sure that there are no protected sites from pre-Columbian antiquity where they want to blast and deforest and clear cut and poison and destroy and bury. Because, you know, oddly enough, peoples back before the advent of electricity, when everybody had to freeze to death in the dark, and it's a minor miracle humanity survived, only it's not. Well, people tended to locate, and lots of people came through this area, lots, for tens of thousands of years. At least 10 or 15. And they tended to locate where they were going to live for a while next to an access to clean water, because back then the water was clean, next to access to game, nearby where they could do some hunting and gathering, all of which can be found in and around the streams which the coal industry has a passion for burying. And every time they get ready to blow away a mountain, they have to do a site survey with some contract archaeologists, known to real archaeologists as the prostitutional equivalent of that discipline. And oddly enough, the contract archaeology reports always come back the same way. Nothing there. Nobody's ever set foot on it. It's just, it's pristine. Even though there are rock shelters with all kinds of it, blast it, boys, before they find it. That's here. Well, thanks to the Angry Indian, a story from National Indigenous Radio Service from Adam Evans with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. the little blurb that accompanies the story merely says, Australian coal mining company Coal Pack, this sounds Orwellian, is disputing the authenticity of an indigenous rock art site within an area of a proposed coal mine near the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. A report commissioned by Coal Pack, gee, I wonder if there was any outcome-based science, involved with this. A report commissioned by Coal Pack questions the age of the art and claims traditional hand stencils are likely to be only a few years old. Yeah, that was Aboriginal people, or maybe just tree huggers sneaking in and stenciling their hands all over these, just to keep us from getting the coal that God done put beneath the... Right. There's only one problem. Part of archaeology is the understanding of context. And in this particular instance, Lithgow Environment Group President Dr. Richard Stiles says, no, there's an abundance of evidence to suggest that these are authentic, ancient artworks. Ain't nothing safe. And I do mean nothing. So, that's a beginning to this Friday on the Front Porch. And, of course, you know what Friday on the Front Porch is, right? It's when we put together a roundtable conversation of extraordinary Americans and just cuss and discuss for a couple of hours, all of us together, as opposed to one-on-one. And I highly invite you to participate. If you never have, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C. Sparky is the longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. And he'll get you into the conversation. We can't use the tradition, the regular phone line because of limitations that Skype has right now. But jump in. You are more than welcome, and we'll be excited to talk to you. If you never have before, and if you're a regular, well, jump in. Any way you slice it, don't be shy. Be part of the conversation. And then this, on the way to round out the hour. We all know who Peggy Nooner is, right? I mean, Noonan is, right? This is the woman who worked in the Reagan White House and at one point penned she got out her Crayola and did some scrawling and wound up writing about being fascinated with Ronald Reagan's feet. You have lovely feet. I've told that story before. Well, she's upset, Nooner is, at that one in her White House. Because she says he's not being all presidential and stuff. And in particular, she doesn't like the way Obama is talking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, God. No kidding. She's mad at him because, see, among other things, President Obama has been going around the country trying to build support for his policies, which are mostly being thwarted by a group of strychnine swiggers from the House of Representatives in conjunction with people like Ted Cruz from the Senate. And he's been a talking mean about the good God-fearing, Bible-thumping, evangelical right wing that's holding our government hostage. And so in a fit of pique, Peggy Noonan said,
he shouldn't be at a campaign-type rallies where he speaks only to the base. He should be speaking to the country. He shouldn't be out there dropping his G's, slouching around a podium, complaining about his ill treatment, describing his opponents with disdain. Stop just hating all the time.
Like I said, this is about his Kansas City speech earlier in the week. And he did say, stop just hating. He also said, get some work done. Dropping his G's. I guess it was completely tuned out during the dim leader administration. Because I think there was some G-dropping going on there, and maybe some non-pronunciation of the letter R. R. But sauce for the goose is never sauce for that one. Or sauce for that one is never sauce for the goose, more aptly put. Because she's all worked up about civility, Peggy Noonan said,
all this reflects a political culture of brute and mindless disdain, the kind of culture that makes divisions worse.
The only problem is that Barack Obama makes divisions worse just by existing. Yeah. Well, existing in the form in which he exists. Peggy Nooner. Pronunciation police. Oh, God, Peggy, don't... Please, don't ever tune into this program. The number of G's dropped and unpronounced R's. You'll probably faint and drown in your Chablis. Let's take a break. Friday on the front porch on the horn. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Kate, for jumping into the... into the challenge pool this evening. Kate just turned 40 into 80 with the lurching away from the whole challenge by our good friend Thomas. So that means we have $35 to go in Thomas's challenge, and then we'll get started on Shirley's Wisconsin challenge, and hopefully in the next 1 hour and 58 minutes we'll take care of both of those and take care of July and get a jump out in front of August. This is Conversation Radio. Listener supported. This is, in fact, The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
You never try to keep the wild ones home. Mister, don't just sit there and wait. Go out on the town, making all of the rounds. It don't matter if you're your own day. My body got fried, dreaming of your pretty eyes up in South Carolina. I can't pronounce my R G's when I speak in Southernese. Honey, do honey come and do me again?
smile. Young girls giggling all the while. That's not my cup of chowder. I go candlelight, cold champagne every night. Honeydew, a little toast for me and you. Maitre d' keeps telling me,
sir, she's just not coming.
Now what the hell's Gargan know? We've been through all this before. Honeydew, honey, come and do me again. All right, Blue Torpedo.
It's a bit much to expect me to run across an article with Peggy Noonan scolding the President of the United States for dropping G's and then go past a song of a direct reference in it. You understand? Yeah. It's Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, the first day of August 2014. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. And, well, Friday on the Front Porch means that we have a wonderful group discussion. And the group is forming as we speak. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. I got a bat signal out to some other people. I'm waiting for them to answer.
Okay.
Hopefully more people will join in.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's summer. It's hard to see the bat signal in broad daylight. And God knows you wouldn't if you're out where you are. Who wants to go out in 106 degrees to find the bat signal, right?
Right, but I was messaging the angry Indian before the show, and I was hoping he'd show up, but since he sent you something,
yeah,
see what happens. I know he's probably listening.
More than likely, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's always a good part of the conversation. By the way, note coming in from Kate with regard to tonight's challenge. She says, everyone who's sitting on the porch tonight needs to leave 5 or 10 more in the bucket sitting on the rail. Pay for the space provided by the horn. Thank you, Kate. Thank you indeed. And that's true. You know, it's tough starting the month in a hole or ending one with it either. Go right ahead.
I'll send you some funds over the weekend along. Do you want me to burn a DVD that you see my question of that movie you want to see?
Oh, no, I got it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my favorite. And I wanted it for Ferg, mainly, because he's never seen it. I could watch it. Have you ever seen it?
I started watching it.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
I got to make my way through it. It's got some strange parts at the beginning.
Oh, well, sure, yeah. but it's a wonderful film. We're talking about The Man Who Would Be King, 1975, John Huston, Michael Caine, Sean Connery. Ferg loves to do his Sean Connery impression, which is kind of an impression of the guy on Saturday Night Live doing Sean Connery, but it's always fun anyway.
Too bad he retired.
Yeah, well, you know.
I think he had a few movies left in him.
And, Peter O'Toole retired, but then lo and behold, toward the very end of his career, he wound up getting nominated for another Academy Award he didn't win. But he turned in an absolutely beautiful performance with a movie called Venus. And it was magnificent. So maybe someone will cajole Sean out of retirement.
I doubt it.
Oh, let's see. So in the group we also have Sergi. Good evening, Sergi.
I hope he's there.
Yeah. And Larry?
Yes, I'm here.
Yay. Hooray. Good. Good, good, good. How are you this evening, Larry?
I'm okay. I'm okay. Just waiting for the group to get started. And I guess I'm okay.
Good, good.
Thank you.
Hey, there's Sergi.
Yes, sorry about that. Just as you did me on the roll call, I dropped my phone.
Oh, no.
So it took me a while to recover. I had to plug my headphones back in, yeah, but I'm good.
Cool, cool. How's Trix down to the Wendy Davis campaign?
Oh, it's chugging along. This is the weekend of action, so I'm about to go down there and handle all the data that's piled up today from the phone banks and from the block walks they had today. I'm going to go up and help shave down the mountain of data because that's pretty much my role.
Well, they couldn't do it without you.
Oh, I'm glad that now I have a smartphone so I can still participate in the front porch on the way there.
Well, yeah, that's excellent. So that's a new thing?
Yes, Bob, it is relatively new. It's been about a month.
Are you Android now?
Oh, I've always been Android. I mean, I've had smartphone service on and off, you know, for years, and this is hopefully going to, you know, be a permanent plan now, hopefully. Yeah, I've always been Android. I don't do Apple. I don't do Apple computers. I don't do Apple mobile devices. I don't do Apple internet appliances. No, I don't call them crapple for nothing, you know.
Hey, good news. Thank you very much to Henry. Henry just finished off Thomas's lurch away from the whole end of July Ted Cassidy challenge and got us started $15 toward Shirley's Wisconsin challenge, and that's a very, very big deal. Thank you. Thank you very much, Henry. That means that we've got $135 to go on Shirley's first of the month with Wisconsin challenge. Shirley's out there the first of every month, and, it's a great help in getting started. So anybody wanting to jump in alongside Sal and Asa and Kate and Henry are, more than welcome so to do. Let's see. Anybody got any news stories just burning a hole in their brains or anything, or shall we leap into all the weirdness I've got accumulated?
No, in my household we are waiting news from my stepson. He had to evacuate from a big forest fire heading his way.
Oh, man. That's frightening.
Yeah, well, he's got a fifth wheel, that they live in, right next to their old family home, the plumbing's shot, and it's kind of like probably like your place.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that. Yeah,
but it's about a 100-year-old house, and it's got a lot of sentimental value. But they had to leave a lot of their stuff in there. They couldn't pack it in their trailer.
Oh man, so I mean,
we got their fingers crossed that they don't lose the old homestead.
My sister and brother-in-law have had to bug out of Mobile periodically on account of hurricanes, but I can't conceptualize what it's like trying to run ahead of a fire, because you know a hurricane will eventually blow itself out. Not so much with a fire, right?
No, not until somebody puts it out. This fire's already at 7,000 acres.
And do they know?
And it looks like a big smoke cloud, like a nuclear bomb heading their way. I've seen the pictures.
Do they know a cause yet? Is this lightning based, or is this
dry lightning?
Okay, so at least it's not some.
Our worst fears for summertime in the Northern California mountains.
Well, yeah, but at least it's not some idiot leaving an unattended campfire.
No, it's lightning, and it's an old growth, fairly old forest. It hasn't burned in a long time.
What does fairly old mean in Northern California?
Oh, about 50 years old.
Okay. Now, is that hardwoods or coniferous stuff or redwoods or what?
Mostly pine, digger pine.
Oh, so that's going to go up really, really, really hot.
Yeah, they're really hot fires.
Wow. So is he out of the danger zone?
I'm sure he's probably at the evacuation center they set up in a little town about 5 to 10 miles away.
Oh, well, I hope everything turns out okay, and I hope when he gets home everything's still there.
The little town he lives in, I'm sure they make it everybody get out so the firemen can. I mean, there's hundreds of fire trucks on the fire because they're coming from all over the place to fight the fire. So I'm sure they want everybody out of town so the fire trucks can maneuver around, do what they got to do.
Yeah, build fire breaks and counter fires and that sort of
thing.
Yeah,
and try to save the town. There's about 200 structures threatened at the moment.
Now, is the fire still burning in Washington State as well?
I haven't checked on that one.
That one was a bit surprising because it wasn't, it's fairly well watered, not expected to be the big fire season, and I guess that one sort of caught people unawares.
I haven't followed the Washington rainfall, but I know everything here is dry as a bone.
Perfect conditions, as it were.
I mean, you look at the drought map of California, and it's just dark red everywhere.
And no relief in sight. I mean, I remember, what was it, April, when you were so happy when there was a bit of a turnaround and some rain, and then nothing.
And nothing.
Oh, by the way, are you responsible for the theme in tonight's chat room, Sparky?
Yes.
Happiness is a cold beer with a fresh tomato?
Yeah, I got lots of them, Bob.
Beers or tomatoes?
Both.
Party at Sparky's house!
Oh, then I had another story for you, if you can bring up the link again. When you were talking about solar power and wind power,
mm-hmm.
I brought up a little thing, approved renewable energy projects on Bureau of Land Management
mm-hmm.
property. And this was updated, I think, in April. But total solar projects equal 3,358 megawatts enough to power between 1,017,000 homes to 2,542,000 homes. And the annual rent the BLM gets is $26,487,616. That's just solar.
That's not chump change.
Now you go down. The other thing they get is transmission lines that are built from these projects over BLM land. So BLM is going to get another $26 million just from the transmission lines.
Wow.
And then there's wind power projects that will add another couple million in property rent. And then there's one geothermal project that got listed for annual royalties of $700,000.
Holy cow.
And that's just in California on Bureau of Land Management land. That sure beats the hell of the what Clive and Bundy.
Well, I was about to say, you reckon maybe we could put a solar farm up on the land that Cloven Bundy was squatting on, or is that bunch so ignorant they'd start shooting the panels?
Well, they'd start shooting the construction workers, probably.
Well, okay. I figured they were so cowardly they'd wait and then they'd start. Because stupid, that's why.
Well, if they get any funding from ALEC, I mean, ALEC is going after private homeowners trying to start taxing the shit out of them for putting solar panels on their house, making it so nobody wants to do it in certain states, you know? I think Oklahoma's the first state they got a law passed.
Evil bastards. You know, that kind of tells me that we really, really, and I've started doing even more work. And this being Friday on the Front Porch, it's an appropriate topic. And maybe, you know, if folks want to email in when they hear the podcast, that's fine. You know, we've been talking about pulling together some sort of a crowdsourcing campaign for a very long time to get the horn off the grid. And I've started taking positive steps toward that, trying to work up what the video is going to look like conceptually. We've still got to figure out what the premiums are going to be. Now, hopefully a lot of folks will go, don't need a premium, and roll on from there. But I've got some ideas and need more. So, you know, anybody that wants to chime in with that, you know, we can do coffee mugs and mouse pads and, you know, the usual suspects.
And save the endangered hillbilly t-shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Save the endangered hillbilly t-shirts.
Perhaps I could offer up. I'm not sure. Is it possible to ship perishable foods, like via the mail?
How perishable?
Needs to be refrigerated perishable.
Depending on when and how. You know, there are outfits out there that'll, for instance, ship ribs.
Because maybe for one of the funding levels, I could offer to do some of my famous gamer food.
I was going to say donut burgers.
Well, I know Sherry's. Sherry's Berries ships like through FedEx or UPS.
Yeah, but I mean it's all doable, and then the real work will come in turning it into a massive, you know, a massive effort to make sure lots of people see the thing. Because going back to when Jim and I, one of our gyms, we have many gyms, when one of our gyms and I were talking about this, you know, the labor is not insubstantial, and the panels themselves ain't cheap. So in order to succeed, we're going to have to get it really wide, really widely disseminated.
Well, you can make a YouTube YouTube video.
Well, that's, yeah, that's part and parcel of it. That has to happen. I'm sitting here watching. Oh, and part of, the other part of it is setting up the necessary equipment for the next 10 years of the horn, because I just scrolled down in the chat room and my chat room has gone all squirrely. So.
Well, that does that sometimes.
Well, for me, it does it all the time.
Oh, do you lose the typing? Oh, there you.
Yeah.
You're out and you're in.
Right. But you really do. You've got that.
I got it.
I've never had a cold beer with a fresh tomato. It just sounds like such a delightful combination. Does it work?
Hell yes, it works.
Okay.
I take them right out of the refrigerator after I chill them and cut, slice them up, quarter them, put a little pepper and salt on it.
Oh, the fresh garden food porn portion of the program, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could ship you some. I can check into it.
I don't think they'll ship, but I've gotten a couple from. I just don't think about chilling them that often, quite frankly. I'm like a kid on Christmas. I get a fresh tomato, I'm in it. I'm on it. I've got, you know, just rinse it off, roll it in salt, and, you know, quit the fooling around.
Mm-hmm. But I got enough that I can stockpile them. I try to pick them before the bugs start getting them, and they're not quite ripe yet. Some of them are down close to the ground. If you leave them there too long, bugs will start getting in them. I haven't dusted them yet this year, but I try to pick them, and then I bring them in, set them on the windowsill, and they ripen up over a couple of days, and then I start putting them in I put them in the back of the refrigerator, and the ones in the front are the ones I eat. And front to back to front as I rotate.
Nice. So do you have any green beans going, or is it mostly just tomatoes?
Just tomatoes. I had some zucchini and squash. We got some butternut squash, but the heat is just tearing those plants up.
I had
the heat around here has been playing hell with my cucumbers. I mean, some areas of North Texas this summer, they've been getting past 110. Keep in mind, this ain't Duncan's dry heat. This is the rainforest heat, so the heat indices can shoot into the 120s. Cucumber plants are tropical, but they're not that tropical.
No, in order to survive that, they would have to not be tropical, Sergi. They'd have to be infernal.
I mean, Texas is truly a state of extremes.
Okay, Larry, tell us what temperature you got in Berkeley. It must have fell off.
Maybe so.
Hey, there was a question earlier in the chat room from Angelo 78 wanted to know how Agnes, everything go good with Agnes?
We're monitoring, you know. It's just a matter of keeping up with these cysts, or one's called a cystic mass that appear to be growing in or on her kidneys. And it's not anything, it's not anything to take lightly, and it's not something you want. So, you know, coming more, the upshot is more tests.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's okay, but more tests.
That's all you can do.
Yeah. And, well, it was, we were down at Charleston Area Medical Center, and That's not like going to your, you know, local little country doctor. Of course, little country doctors don't exist anymore either. When I go downtown for my routine rewrite of the scripts visit, I call that going to the not a doctor.
Doctor's assistant.
You either get a physician's assistant or a certified nurse practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say you can't get good medical care from them, but you know, I'm kind of old school. Doctors is doctors. But more and more, they don't doctor, they manage the people who do the doctoring. And some of that has to do with the lack of physicians, which is, you know, there's probably an entire show's worth of conversation in the degree to which medical schools keep the number of MDs and DOs artificially low. It's good for business.
Yeah, but you'd think in some places the schools would start turning out more people because there's more customers.
To a certain extent, yeah. But remember, and I've never been to medical school, so I can't speak with any authority. But of any given medical school class, you know, some people want to be surgeons, and some people want to be oncologists, and some people want to be pathologists, and some people want to be dermatologists. So, and frankly, if I understand what I've read is correct, the one thing nobody wants to be is a little country doctor, because there's no money in it.
Or a VA doctor.
Yeah. Similarly. Yeah.
I don't see how they're going to recruit more doctors with this new bill. They're going to just have to pay people to go to private doctors.
Well, I'd like to think that eventually, the VA is a single-payer system. And eventually that's what we want for this whole country. But it's going to be predicated on having plenty of doctors. And right now we don't have a system that puts a premium on training physicians. And we need, you know, we need all those specialties, but we also need primary care folks. Because the preventative end is one of the most important aspects of medicine as far as I'm concerned.
You know, as that old saying goes, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Exactly. And beyond that, well, corollary to prevention is education. And just the teaching, you know, especially in a rural area like this, not that Appalachian people are any less intelligent, but whenever you're dealing with a poverty community, wherever it is, you're going to have to teach twice as much. And so it's about changing attitudes. It's about changing diets. It's about teaching new diabetics how to live with diabetes, which I are one. I'm really proud of the fact that my blood sugar numbers my blood sugar numbers have been so good, in fact, that my not a doctor said, listen, if you want to, we can do a trial and, you know, just take you off the meds and see how you do. And I'm like, no, not yet. Because I've got awesome blood sugar.
Are you doing the white pills?
Yeah, the name of them. Metformin.
Yeah, that's what my mom used to take.
And it seems it seems to be fairly benign, and does its job. And I'm not fooling around with insulin or anything like that. And of course, eliminating soda pop, you know, from one's diet is a big deal. And I remain convinced that trying to eliminate I've made a conscious effort. Trying to eliminate high fructose corn syrup from one's diet makes a really big difference.
I gave up drinking soda pop years ago. Working on a job site, I used to have Pepsis and stuff. But then I just switched to Gatorade to get the electrolytes. And I never went back to soda pop.
Well, the funny thing about Gatorade is, for years, and at least some of these industries are responding. For years, Gatorade was made with high fructose corn syrup, but now I think it's the G2. You'll see that it's dextrose and glucose, but there's no high fructose corn syrup on the label. And Ocean Spray, with some of its, all real sugar, no high fructose corn syrup. Now, of course, I can't go guzzling the real sugar either. You know, once in a while as a treat, maybe. You know, on a hot day like this, one of the Mexican Cokes with real sugar in it, Coca-Cola the way Coca-Cola used to be, and a little splash of rum and a squeeze of lime, you know, a Cuba Libre. That's a little slice of paradise. But it can't happen all the time. And the other thing I've learned is that if you take diabetes seriously, you will become a label reader, which I was already, and now I'm more of one. And you learn so much, like the fact that there is a dry form of high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrin, and it's all over the place. You know, we had a barbecue with family members last week, and I was being lazy. We were all very busy and too much, you know, carrying on and going on. So I went look. I didn't have time to make my barbecue sauce. So I went out and just got barbecue sauce. And I had to sit there and grab bottle after bottle after bottle after bottle, looking for one that didn't have high fructose corn syrup in it. I finally found a couple good, though, and they were good. One was called Sticky Fingers, and the other one was Stubbs's. Yes, Sergi.
I'm guessing they were also pretty, you know, expensive too, right?
No, not compared. No, maybe by volume, yeah. You know, you could get this giant tankard of KC Masterpiece goo, which I wouldn't put on food anyway because I hate the taste of it. Artificial hickory smoke flavor turns me off. But no, they were all competitively priced, about $2.50 a bottle.
Yeah, I mean, I love the way that you put that, tankard.
Yeah, and you know, if barbecue sauce has a squeeze squirt top on it, I'm thinking I don't want it. Because the apple chips.
That actually kind of reminds me of. Oh, sorry.
No, please continue.
Squeeze squirt top. That actually reminded me of a scene off of Mama's Family from the 80s, where they had to participate in this State Department program and bring a Soviet citizen and over to show her what America was like. One of the first things that happened is she walked in on Bubba in the kitchen making a bologna sandwich, and he was just squeezing with, like, he was holding the bottles about 5 feet above the sandwich and just squeezing the mustard, squeezing the mayonnaise. And then, you know, Bubba says, She asks, what is that? Bubba says, oh, it's a bologna sandwich. Do you have bologna back in the Soviet Union? And she says, oh, well, yes, but only for special occasions, like Christmas.
God.
Well, you're talking about, I guess my barbecue sauce is out because it has a squeeze top.
Well, not if you make your own. No, but why? What do you use?
Sweet Baby Ray's.
Yeah, that's not terrible. But it has HFCS in it.
No, I never checked. When we got the barbecue recipe from my sister a few years ago for ribs, we just continued to use it that way because that's what she used. So maybe I'll have to look and find something else. I got a couple packages of ribs. Got it in the freezer.
If it's out there, the Stubbs is, it comes in three or four different flavors. It's really good.
Stubbs?
Yeah, Stubbs.
Okay, I'll look for it.
Maybe that's one of those things that is said to be out of Texas that is really, I don't know, Texans don't pay any attention to.
They got a lot of highfalutin ones down at the butcher shop. I'll have to go look at those.
I haven't noticed that they're selling barbecue sauce at Lowe's now. I don't think I'm in
Lowe's is selling barbecue sauce?
Yeah, over there next to their grills and stuff. I guess the Weber Grill Company has its own line of barbecue seasonings and barbecue sauce now. Me, I don't think buying barbecue sauce from Lowe's is something that I'm going to be doing anytime soon.
Next time in the Home
Depot. Except you've got the same company as Malwart.
Next time I'm in the Home Depot, I'll have to check, see if they got some near their grills. That's all we got here is a Home Depot.
Well, I always, for some reason, I have to go, you know, I'm not buying, I have to go and browse the grills. I love them. It's one of those things that's my thing. And I was showing Ferg the other day the difference between good versus bad grills. And we were looking at gas grills, and there was one by, like, Charbroil or something. And I said, open the lid. And he does, and he sets it back down. I said, okay, now come here. And I took him to one that was $400 more expensive by Weber. They build great gas grills. Not the classic old Weber pot charcoal grill, you know, is a classic for a reason, but they build great gas grills. I said, now lift the lid on that, and he goes, ugh. I said, yeah, a lot better steel.
Well, the Weber grill I have is probably around 30 years old.
Yeah, they're almost indestructible, too.
One of the vents, the bottom vents fell off of it, though. So I'm going to have to take it out the shop, turn it upside down, see if I can drill a hole through it, put a bowl in it or something.
Now, there's another pot-shaped grill based on a Japanese design. Wait a minute. Yeah, Tim's still in the chat room, called the Big Green Egg. And I've always thought those things were fascinating, but never came up with the gumption to drop the money on one.
Hmm. They were selling one down at the butcher shop, looked like a wine barrel. It was a smoker grill.
Oh, yeah. I like
now
it.
They're selling these pellet barbecues.
I don't know how I'd feel about those. Because the pellets are held together with glues and binders and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been back down there in a while. My wife stopped in there and bought a whole ton of meat a few weeks ago.
Yeah, what sort?
T-bone steaks, tri-tip, lean beef, ribs, chicken breasts. Well, my neighbor just come rolling home. He drives a logging truck.
Which is different from being a
coal miner.
A coal roller.
Yeah, his truck don't put out any black soot either. He's got a hell of a grill out in his front yard. I don't know why he doesn't have it in the backyard, but he's got out front by his garage, where his garage opened up, and he has people over all the time, barbecue stuff, and the sweet smells of something coming drifting across.
Oh, it perfumes the whole neighborhood when I get the smoker going here.
Yeah. But he might have some business up off that fire, boy. One thing about those fires here, that the loggers go right to work as soon as they're out. Just salvage as much wood as they can. I think we lost Sergi.
Yeah, it looks like. And by all appearances, lost Larry.
Something may come up on his end. I have one shy person that doesn't want to talk.
Really?
Yeah. So there's no point. And Waggy is on his way
to Madagascar.
Escar, yeah. He should be in Ohio tonight. I think he was going through Cleveland.
Yeah, that's that, if I recall correctly. Yeah, he was going to have a couple of nights in Cleveland and then off to Madagascar.
Put a picture on Facebook today. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I didn't. That's going to be a hell of a plane ride.
Yeah, anytime you go around the world. Well, you want your plane ride to Germany. Well, to France first.
Yeah, that was just Atlanta to Paris. That was 8 hours in the middle of the night, crowded and unable to sleep.
Oh.
And
well, I used to do a 17-hour thing back in my younger days when I was in the Air Force from California to Okinawa.
Did you have any drunk rednecks trying to drink the national wine output of France one row over from you?
No, we were on an Air Force plane.
Yeah, that's what, because this was an Air France flight,
mm-hmm.
And in conjunction with Delta, and it was lovely service and everything, but we had some sure enough rednecks, and you know, big old cowboy hats and everything. And they were, honey, bring me another one of them vinos. We miss you.
Yeah. When we flew in the Air Force, we always tried to get sleeping pills from the flight surgeon. Because flying across the Pacific on a KC-135 is hell.
Oh, I can imagine.
Because you got the troop seats that go down the side of the plane, canvas that you sit in. And then you got cargo in the center of the plane. And when you're flying, you can stretch out on the floor or somewhere. And the bunks in the plane are reserved for the crew. They usually have two crews on the plane. So, and if you're lucky, maybe the boom operator will let you sit in the boom, on the boom operator's couch and let, watch the world go by. I got to do that once coming back from Washington, D.C., over from Andrews. And that's a hell of a way to see the USA, I tell you.
Oh, no doubt.
Oh, Asa sent me a message in Skype. It's home D-spot, Sparky.
Oh,
and
yes.
Did you know that the CEO, Frank Blake, is a raging right-winger?
Oh, he absolutely is.
Yeah, if we know now.
If we had a home despot, I wouldn't go in there.
Well, I don't have much of a choice since the local hardware store went out of business. I got a farm supply I can go to and get some kind of stuff, but there's other stuff. The only place you can get it now is Home Depot. And I definitely don't go into the Walmart here.
Just for the evil factor?
Yeah, just for the evil cringe factor.
Oh, by the way, just because we clear out some silliness on Fridays, did you see this post about the guy in Utah at the language school who got fired?
The homophone?
Yeah, homophone.
I had to look that up to see what it meant.
I had to look it up to make sure it wasn't an Onion post. But no, right-wingers in this country are so stupid that anything that begins with H-O-M-O is suspect. And homophone, the guy was I guess he was the social media guy for a for-profit school in Utah, and that focused on language for people learning English. And so he put up a blog post about homophones, words that sound the same, because, of course, homo means same. Homogenized means to make milk, you know, all the same, so it doesn't separate into whey and cream, and right? And he got fired because the owner of the for-profit school decided that would make people think that we were part of the gay agenda. Probably the wrong accent, being Utah and everything, but close enough, right?
Yeah, I guess.
This country. Meanwhile, here in West Virginia, the Attorney General, who is supposed to be the head lawyer and head enforcer of the laws of the state of West Virginia, has asked a federal judge to hold up on ruling on a same-sex marriage case. Now, this is a guy named Patrick Morrissey. He's about as much of a West Virginian, well, he's probably less of a West Virginian, Sparky, than you are. You at least, you know a good bit about this state now because of the time that you spend in conversation here. Patrick Morrissey is a pharmaceutical lobbyist from New Jersey that got run by the Teabaggers and Americans for Prosperity and Alec and that filthy bunch. Because we had an attorney general who would actually stand up for people in this country. And so he's written a letter asking a circuit. So the U.S. District Court judge had said he was going to hold off. He put a same-sex marriage challenge on hold pending a ruling by the Fourth Circuit. Well, the Fourth Circuit ruled on Virginia's same-sex marriage law and said, nope, that's unconstitutional. Really, really unconstitutional. Get out of here. So theoretically, the district judge in West Virginia should say, yep, Fourth Circuit ruled, goodbye, it's over, let people marry and love and be free, even in West Virginia. So the attorney general said, how about you keep the bigotry in place, Your Honor, until the rats on the Supreme Court have had a run at it? Isn't it nice?
I see John Fox has dropped into the chat room.
Oh. Let's get a shout out to John. And there's Sergi back.
Thank you, Bob.
Do you have a little issue?
Yeah, sometimes on the Skype Android mobile app, for some reason, group calls will drop. And generally in the apps, if you type /go live into the text thingy, it should put you back in the call. But sometimes it just refuses to do that, even if you're still connected. But I finally got it back.
Cool.
Well, we do have a couple of stories banging around out there that I thought would be worthy of our consideration this evening. You know, one of the people who has been almost entirely grandfathered or grandmothered out of consideration on this program is Anthrax Coulter. But I can't resist mentioning this. She showed up on the program of that that life support system for a haircut, you know, the Hannity job. And she said that, and I'm not trying to raise the specter of the Israel-Palestine crisis. This is tangential. It's tangential to this, if anything about it can be tangential. It's tangential to the larger topic here. She said that she wishes Bibi Netanyahu was our president, and further that she wishes that we could deal with our border the way that Bibi Netanyahu deals with Hamas, by implication the way that Bibi Netanyahu is dealing with a whole bunch of civilians. Okay. So leave that aside for a moment and enter a guy named Robert Jones, who is a Klansman and claims to be an imperial wizard. I think imperial wizard itself is one of those things. I don't think you have to run real hard in the election for imperial wizard anymore, or Grand Kleagle, or any of those other goofy names. Al Jazeera did a piece on the Klan, and it was quite interesting. And this guy in a hood who says he's Imperial Wizard Robert Jones says he wants to start, he thinks the United States should start gunning down children at the Mexican border.
K.I. Classy.
Yeah. These people are criminals to begin with when they come to our country. When they come here and cross our borders illegally, they're breaking the law. What makes you think they're going to continue to stop breaking the law once they get here? They're going to continue breaking the law once they get here. Behold the stunning degree of intellectual rigor involved in that statement.
One of the local progressives here in North Texas has been spreading this, you know, meme around, like, the local news station, Facebook pages and stuff, whenever they do a stir about the immigrant children. And I think it's really cool. It's a picture. It's an old-timey picture of a Native American, and the text on it reads, "You feel as if your country is being invaded?"
Yep.
And it's pretty much, yep, pretty much, because it's like, yeah, so, you know, or no, correction, it says, "So you feel your country is being invaded," and it's just, that's all it says, and it's like, yeah, that's pretty much all it needs to be said.
And then, I guess what, there was a community, and Fritz, Haley may be able to help us with this, a community in Arkansas was beset by the Klan throwing their flyers wrapped in plastic bags, I guess to keep them from getting wet, in people's driveways and lawns, encourage them to join right up. This country hasn't, well, I mean, we acknowledge it, and other progressive broadcasters acknowledge it. This country has a fascism problem, and it is on the march and on the rise. And is it better just to ignore the rotten bastards, or to openly oppose them and thereby give them free publicity?
It's hard to say. I mean, I would lean more towards the latter, simply because, yes, that'll give them more publicity, but if someone is so stupid, so sociopathic, so ignorant as to be swayed towards the fascism side, then they were beyond hope anyway. It's about reaching the same people, you know, who are also going to oppose it, you know.
I just, well, 2014, you would hope by now we had sorted out the business of 1914.
Yeah, I mean, there's
not
there's
so plenty, much.
There's just so many people out there who you just can't reason with them to begin with. I mean, last Friday, for instance, what happened to me, and I told everyone in last Friday night's chat about this, you know, is that I was standing on the, you know, last Friday evening, I was standing on the corner of Magnolia and Sixth here in Fort Worth. I chose that intersection because it has lots of pedestrian traffic and bicyclist traffic, for that matter. And I was holding my little protest sign, right? And I made sure to stand on the sidewalk, the public domain, you know, and the whole bit. You know, and, you know, since it's an urban area, the shops and stuff front the sidewalk. And the parking lots are tucked away behind the back. Well, I'm standing in front of this restaurant. This vegan restaurant, which I like to joke sells rabbit food, called the Spiral Diner. And it was that evening I found out that manager has, you know, is that Skinner, I think it was Skinner off The Simpsons. One of his quotes was, you know, good Lord, the rod up that man's butt has a rod up its butt.
Yeah.
First he sends one of his waiters who tries to tell me to go away, and I refuse because I'm standing on the sidewalk. I'm not on their property. So the waiter goes back inside, and the waiter was pretty cordial about it. I mean, he was ordered by his boss to do it, so I don't think he really wanted to, but then I think that's Steve. Anyway, then the manager comes outside and just, you need to get the fuck out of here. And he just starts griping at me. And I at first I did try to reason with him. I was like, hello, U.S. Constitution. If I'm not on you, if I'm on public property, I can protest as much as I damn well please. And it got to the point where he was about to strike me, so I had to dial 911 on him. The cop comes out and schools him on First Amendment civics, and he goes back inside, you know.
Nice!
It was awesome. You know, that's one thing I like about the Fort Worth Police Department. They are very reasonable as far as police departments go.
I like police stories that involve police doing the serving and protecting part of the job instead of the stomping and maiming part.
I mean, I remembered his name and badge number because I called in a compliment to police headquarters. But you know, it was like, you know, he came outside and he calmly explained to the manager of that restaurant, yeah, he's standing on public property. The sidewalk is public domain. You do not own the sidewalk in front of your restaurant. And, basically, it's sad. The man, you know, you'd think the manager of an upscale urban restaurant would know fifth grade civics, but nope, he didn't. And there's a very friendly officer at game and said, you know, if he gives me any more trouble, call me again.
Did he? It's, well...
Jeremy joined us, I think.
Yeah, you there, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just going to be in the background listening for a little bit.
Okay, cool. Well, welcome to the group. And a reminder, if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, which is what you're listening to right now, then by all means, if you'd like to, using the Skype device, and it works on tablet devices, phone devices, your PC, what have you, just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype, and Sparky will shepherd you into the conversation, and you will be welcome to participate therein. By the way, a reminder here at 4 minutes past the hour, we met, thankfully, Thomas's lurch away from the hole challenge for Thursday, which meant that folks doubled their money thanks to a $100 challenge by Thomas. And we're now working on Shirley's Wisconsin challenge for the first of the month. Shirley's always right there at the beginning of the month. And we've got $135 to go in about 55 minutes. If you would like to be a part of doubling your money on that up to $135, your participation is more than welcome because we did sort of lurch out of July, as a matter of fact. Oh, by the way, as Sparky noted, our buddy John Fox, who does so much to keep the website and the technology, the aging technology around here working. John Fox pointed out that there is a free track available from the Di Pritchard Band's new album, and you're welcome to go and download it. Hey, John, if you're listening, give me that link again, please. Just pop it into the chat room so I can direct people to it, because I lost it on my screen. And hopefully that'll happen momentarily, but the album is the Di Pritchard Band, Killin' Time, and the free track is Big Man Movin'. Di Pritchard Band, or DiPritchard.com, DiPritchard.com is where you go to get the album. DiPritchard.com/shop/music/big-man-movin-free-download. If you need that repeated, just give me a holler. I'm going to open it up over here on the tired old production computer and make sure I've got it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a free download, a track from Killin' Time by the Di Pritchard Band. And DiPritchard.com, shop, music, Big Man Movin', free download. So, by all means, check it out. It's a whale of a... Okay, great. Thank you, John. John says there's a link to the free download right on the homepage. So, DiPritchard, DiPritchard.com, DiPritchard.com, and the link's right there on the homepage. Awesome. You all will enjoy it. And the whole album is just a rockin' good time. I was listening to it, a couple of weekends ago. I had a little something going on the barbecue and just had the studio monitors cranked up as I sat outside by the smoker. It was fun, real fun. And I played several tracks here for you. Hope you enjoyed them. Hope you bought the record. Oh, okay, here's an easy one, too. TinyURL, TinyURL.com/JohnFoxRocks. TinyURL.com/JohnFoxRocks. And he does. Well and truly. Let's see. We got past... who knew Ann Coulter had joined the ladies' auxiliary of the Klan? I'll get email about that, too. I have no doubt.
Well, I mean, are we 100% sure?
Yeah, see, I knew that was... Yeah, I knew.
I mean, look at that Adam's apple, Bob. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they are hiding a little sausage.
Yeah, but I don't want to be mean to the trans community that way, because it's not their fault.
Well, I mean, well, here's the thing. I mean, we're not talking about transgender people. We're talking about Ann Coulter. Because, you know, I mean...
Well, right. Ann Coulter is removed from the larger universe of talking about members of the human species generally, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same principle that, you know, because take Stephanie Miller's view on it, is that she will make endless, you know, gay jokes about Republicans who get, you know, like, I mean, she and Chris and Jim absolutely decimated Larry Craig on their show, and they decimated what's his name, what was the name of that preacher, Ted Haggard, I think it was. And,
oh, you're talking about, you know, the one who got caught sniffing snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt?
Yeah, that one.
Colorado Ted.
They like to refer to him as the noted crystal Methodist. But, you know, it's just like, it's not, but, you know, their view on it is that, you know, they aren't being, you know, derogatory to the gay community. They're being derogatory to homophobic men who are in denial about their own sexuality, and they end up getting caught up in it, you know. In their hypocrisy. You know, it's okay to make fun of hypocrites, and Ann Coulter's definitely one.
Hey, this just in, Sergi. Your governor has tapped $38 million in emergency funds to pay for National Guard border deployment after he couldn't get the feds to pay for it, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I got the news alert today. Yes, sir. Here he is. Here he's something else.
Hey, I've got a classic here. I'll just to keep keep things from going sideways audio wise, I'll pot the group down for a moment. This is too good not to play. This is too good not to run. This is audio from yesterday. Just as prologue, the degree to which climate change denial and the idiocy that engenders it has grabbed our government where it hurts. You know, pick a part on the anatomy you favor not. But well, anyway, there was a resolution entered in the United States Senate. And it was a resolution, all it said was climate change is real. Climate change is real. Four words. Now, it may have had a little bit more prolix prose in there than that. I mean, we're talking about the Senate, after all. But the essence of it, the upshot, the basic premise was that, yes, climate change is a real thing with which we have to cope. Well, lo and behold, up jumps Senator Jim Inhofe, who, Bart Kopp, whom we all miss very badly, used to refer to simply as Pissquick. Up jumps Senator Jim Inhofe to declare that he had an objection, because the Earth has experienced no warming in the last 15 years. Yeah, really, no warming on Earth in the last 15 years. The Earth has just stayed the same temperature everywhere, all the time, no warming. And every now and then, there's a moment of glorious brilliance that occurs, and the leading proponent of being sane about climate change is Rhode Island's Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. Nice guy. Met him. Really, nice guy. And takes climate change very seriously. You may recall a month or so back, we had the story about how he had a colloquy with Joe Manchin about climate change on the floor of the Senate, in which he talked about the necessity of dealing with climate change, and Joe Manchin talked about how climate change was driven by the increased population of the planet. You know, too many of those people. By those people, of course, we mean tree huggers. And at one point, Sheldon Whitehouse said, well, by God, he was going to come to West Virginia. And I'm still waiting to find out, because I want him to come to West Virginia, because I want him to see mountaintop removal. I want him to see the cradle of climate change, where it was born and where it yet persists. But yesterday, when Jim Inhofe jumped up and displayed in all its ignorant glory his manifest ignorance, sorry, overworked the ignorance word there, Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island was ready, waiting, willing, and able to deal with it. Sheldon Whitehouse, Senator, Democrat from Rhode Island.
Mr. President, I appreciate very much having had the opportunity to hear those words from what I can only describe as an alternate reality, from the one that I inhabit anyway. First, let me say that the very first paragraph of the resolution is this. Whereas the 2014 National Climate Assessment stated, the most recent decade was the nation's warmest on record. U.S. temperatures are expected to continue to rise. There is some evidence that certain temperatures have been flat for a few years. Atmospheric temperatures. What that little rhetorical device omits to consider is two things. One, 93% of the heat that comes onto the Earth from global warming goes into the oceans. And maybe 3 or 4% actually goes into the atmosphere. 93-3. So if there's any change in the ocean, which regulates the temperature of the Earth, then it's going to have a pronounced effect on atmospheric temperature. And the ocean continues to warm. People will say, no, the Earth stopped warming. It hasn't warmed for 12 years, 15 years, whatever they say. No. If you actually look at it, the oceans are continuing to warm. There's been this step in atmospheric temperature at a certain level. The other thing that gets left out when our friends say that is that this isn't the first step. You look at the history of how this got to be the hottest decade on record, and over you can look at the graph and you see these steps. To pretend that each step is the last one runs completely against the science. So to say that we had no warming is just not factual. To say that the government, he used the word colluding, is colluding together, that's a fairly tough word to use. Let me tell you some of the government agencies who are so-called colluding together and believe that climate change is real and that carbon pollution is causing it. How about NASA? We trust them to send our astronauts into space. We trust them to deliver a rover the size of an SUV to the surface of Mars safely and drive it around, sending data and pictures back from Mars to us. You think these people know what they're talking about? We trust NOAA with our weather predicting, and that's what they tell us. Nobody's saying they're incompetent at weather predicting. Don't listen when people are warning you about storms. But somehow when they talk about climate change, that's colluding. How about the United States Navy? The Commander-in-Chief of our Pacific Command, Admiral Locklear, has said that the number one threat we face in the Pacific theater comes from climate change. Is he colluding when he says that? This is a career Navy man who the people of America have trusted with the security of our Pacific theater. And it's exactly consistent with what the Department of Defense Quadrennial Defense Review says both last time, 4 years ago, and most recently. And if you want to ignore the federal government, if you live in a world in which you think the federal government colludes with itself to make up things that aren't true, okay. But look at the property casualty insurance and reinsurance industry. They're the people with the biggest bet on this. They have billions of dollars riding on getting it right. And they say climate change is real, carbon pollution is causing it, we've got to do something about it. So does the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, because they care about the effect that this will have on the people who have the least. So does every major U.S. scientific society, every single one. So you can take a poll or a petition and say that it has 30,000 names on it. I'm told that among the names on that petition are the Spice Girls, are people from MASH, like Dr. Frank Burns. Right, so it's almost a comedic effort. And when you say that they're not...
Really? Dr. Frank Burns? You tell them, ferret face!
9,000 that have degrees? That's what, 0.00003%? Of our population of 300 million, maybe I got a zero wrong there. The idea that you can't find 9,000 people who think the Earth is flat is a bit of a stretch. And the idea that we should base our policy on a petition that imaginary people are on, rather than on what NASA and NOAA and the United States Navy and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and every major scientific society and the entire property casualty insurance reinsurance industry are telling us, it's just extraordinary. And if you want to go into the private sector, you have to look no further than Coke and Pepsi. Look no further than Walmart. Look no further than Mars. And go over there to the candy drawer and you can get wonderful Mars products. It's a huge company. They are going carbon neutral and they are desperately concerned about climate change. Look at Nike, look at Google, look at Apple, American company after American company. The only place, other than of course the 9,000 people who joined the Spice Girls and Major Frank Burns on this petition, where denial is anything credible any longer, is here in Congress, where the money from the fossil fuel industry still has such a pernicious effect. But even among the Republicans, I'll close by saying this and yield to my distinguished chairman. Even among your Republicans, they're losing their young voters on this. People know better. People know better. You poll Republicans who are under the age of 35, and a majority of them will say that somebody who believes in climate denial is ignorant, out of touch, or crazy. That's what the young Republicans think about that position. So time is on our side. The day will come when the United States Senate can face the fact that climate change is real. And I want to thank Senator Klobuchar and salute her for her effort to bring such a non-controversial proposition to the floor in the form of a resolution. Such a non-controversial and factual proposition. And it's a measure of our times and a measure of this body and a measure of the influence on it that it was not passed by unanimous consent, but was objected to by the Republicans. I yield the floor.
Bravo. What was that? Ignorant, uninformed, or crazy? I'll take... now, we're talking about Inhofe, Jim Inhofe, right? I'll take crazy for everything on a daily double, Alex. Of course... Everything the right wing is doing, and I'm bringing the group back in now, everything the right wing are doing is a function of this sort of retrograde motion, the desperate acts of the desperate acts of terrified white people, rich terrified white people. Now the question obtains, and I'll put this to the group and to anyone else not in the group. I mean, email, Twitter, Facebook, what have you. Sheldon Whitehouse referenced people under 35 who are Republicans who know that that position is nuts. When they get old enough to be to really be parts, you know, of the overarching structures of their jobs and organizations and whatnot, will they change their tune when the sons of the Koch brothers start writing the checks? Because, see, we have to remember that the Koch brothers are a multi-generational operation. Daddy Koch, became what he became after he decided that he would do business with Uncle Joe Stalin. And then Stalin stiffed him. And he came home from Soviet Russia a very, very bitter man and began funding the John Birch Society, which then ran out and told the world that Dwight David Eisenhower, yes, beloved Ike, I like Ike, was a commie. And every president from Dwight David Eisenhower to the present, in the eyes of the John Birch Society, has been a commie. And that is the legacy of Daddy Koch, which he passed down to Charles and David Koch. And I don't care how many goddamn ballets they sponsor and how many installments of Nova they provide funding support for, they remain a bunch of right-wing, neo-fascist, proto-Klansmen, John Birchers. And they have progeny. So that's the question. Republicans under 35 know that it's crazy to deny the reality of climate change. Will they continue to think it's crazy when someone is writing them a check to think that it's perfectly rational? Because remember, it's hard to get someone to understand something when his paycheck or her paycheck depends on her not understanding it. Anybody? Bueller? Chat group?
I'm sorry. Only if you can sell your soul to the devil.
And if the price is right.
Some people will do it. Just like our Congress critters.
And see, that's the essential problem here, Sparky. Apple and Google and Coke and Pepsi and M&M Mars and Nike and all these giant corporate actors can be concerned about climate change, and they can act within their own realms about climate change. But if we are to meaningfully do something about it and prevent the horrors of climate change, because they are real. Look, Sparky, your boy is bugged out of his home. Because of a fire that is related, in some way probably, to climate change.
Well, of course. I know it's real. I've known it's real. I've seen what lightning fires can do.
Yeah. So, you know, so these corporations can do what they need to protect the corporation, but they cannot protect we the people. Even if one were to assume that these corporations are benign, the very nature of their corporate structure prevents them from acting to protect the body politic and the nation, the polis, whatever we want to call it, our people, we the people. They can't do it. Only government can do it. And on the other hand, not a majority, but enough of a plurality of screeching, hopping up and down right-wing asshats who apparently are enough to make sure that that as these symptoms of climate change get worse, more people die.
All these corporations can do is their little part. Have you seen Apple's flying saucer spaceship looking new building?
No.
The big ring. The whole roof is a solar panel.
Oh, wow.
And it's a big giant circle with a big, like, park in the middle of the circle. The building runs around. It's just a big ring, and the whole top of the roof is solar panels.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
But that's what's going on in Silicon Valley. I mean, shortly here, the 49ers are going to initiate their new stadium, and it is completely solar-powered.
And I applaud all that stuff, Sparky.
But that's what corporations are doing, but you can't get Republicans to do it.
No, and what are corporations going to do when 5 million people are underwater in South Florida?
Not much.
I mean, to their credit, Walmart will truck in water and ice. The breweries will send in water. They'll divert water to the disaster zone from the production of beer, if past is prologue. But they can't deal with the massive human crisis that will be occasioned. And you know, the larger consideration also is, how do we, and because I don't mean to be Appalachocentric, but I just is, how does a region like Appalachia, the entirety of whose political representation denies climate change, how do we deal with it? We're just, because it's part of the same mindset. You know, when the coal industry would go bust in previous generations, they'd just leave and leave us to fend for ourselves. Well, what happens when we're left to fend for ourselves with climate change? We're not prepared. 2 minutes of 80-mile-an-hour winds 2 years ago was enough to knock out the power grid to hundreds of thousands of people in the state, and it didn't come back for weeks. And because we're an elderly state, that meant octogenarians sweltering in what then became 100-degree heat. We used our automobile, and of course, burning gasoline, therefore contributing to climate change. I know. But we used, and we're reasonably healthy here, we used our automobile with the air conditioner running as a cooling station.
And you don't have when you don't have electricity, you don't have ice. Or you can buy ice.
We couldn't.
Nobody had ice.
No. For days. Eventually there was, but for days there wasn't. And, in fact, most of the state's disaster response infrastructure was, as people who remember that time will recall, down at the Greenbrier, making sure that billionaire Jim Justice's golf tournament went on, while 80-year-old grannies across the street sweltered in 100-degree heat. No water, no ice. And that's what I mean when I say, how are we going to deal with climate change? Because that derecho was climate change. Because you could talk to the old-timers and say, anything like this? No, ain't nothing like this ever. You know, 80-year-old people, 90-year-old people, nothing like this has ever come through.
Like that tornado they had the other day in Massachusetts. And,
right, in Revere? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're getting tornadoes out here sometimes. We never had them before.
Oh, and I saw tornado warnings for Madison, Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago. That's not supposed to happen. I mean, it's flat and relatively flat and everything up there, but no. It should be extremely uncommon. But I've heard it several summers on end now.
Well, that, and we can also add onto the pile that severe thunderstorm that blew off the ocean onto LA's beaches, and several people got injured, and what, one or two people died from getting struck by lightning on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Venice Beach, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know,
you know, L.A., I mean, a severe thunderstorm warning in L.A., not even a tornado warning. A severe thunderstorm warning is pretty extraordinary for L.A. County.
Did you see happen to see that story that Tim from L.A. put on Facebook this morning? About the weird sea creatures washing up on the beach at Monterey?
No. But it's not.
I know.
You know, stuff's being churned up out of the depths of the ocean, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking on his homepage now. If he can, there it is. Thousands of bizarre blue animals. I'll put it in the chat room. You got it, Bob?
Yeah, let's see.
Oh, they get them in Australia, according to what John Fox says.
Yeah, that's some sort of jellyfish, isn't it? Portuguese man of war? Or...
He says they're common on Australian beaches, but ain't nobody ever seen them here in California.
Well, that's the only jellyfish I've ever heard of that doesn't have a harmful sting. But in the larger context of climate change, there's, you know, and I don't know if we understand it as such, but we damn sure better in a hurry. People like Jim Inhofe are actually becoming toxic to human beings. It's, remember when we've talked about, for instance, how Glenn Beck went on his tirade about the Tides Foundation, and the next thing you knew, some dude was drinking a fifth of Courage and heading out with a bunch of guns to go shoot up the progressive Islamo-fascist at the Tides Foundation?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is kind of that, isn't it, Sparky? Jim Inhofe and all the money behind him and all the weirdos of the right wing and the repig-licking denialist party are becoming dangerous. I'm not saying it's like the Glenn Beck scenario because I want somebody to go after Jim Inhofe. No. Jim Inhofe is becoming dangerous to this country the way Glenn Beck was when he inspired that guy to go and try to shoot up the Tides Foundation. Jim Inhofe is encouraging people in this country to become an actual existential threat to people being able to continue being living human beings in this country. People. Yeah, climate change is not some esoteric. Now, Jim Inhofe thinks it is because he thinks he'll always be able to get away from it. But one of these days, he's actually liable to be home in Oklahoma Stan when some of that climate change comes twisting and swirling across the flatlands and, you know, throws his sorry ass 30 miles and sticks him through a telephone pole.
Let's hope he's flying.
Oh, he'll be flying, Sparky.
Oh, remember when he landed at on the wrong runway or something at the wrong airport?
Jesus. But whether
I mean, you think somebody that's a pilot would understand the weather?
Well, you would hope, but then again, he, you know, we're to, and I think that's why Sheldon Whitehouse said what he said in that clip. He was kind of nailing him because Inhofe should be relying on weather forecasts generated by the federal government for the purpose, for the benefit of the Federal Aviation Administration, for the benefit of pilots, right?
Correct.
And so what? This guy doesn't trust NOAA? They're engaged in a conspiracy to keep him from getting more money from the Koch brothers? Wow. Oh, hey, a little bit of an update. Bless his heart, our buddy Thomas has jumped in with a message saying, have some dirt, we've got a hole to fill. And so now, having sponsored the Lurch Away from the Hole challenge for the end of July, he's jumped in to answer part of the challenge for Shirley's Wisconsin challenge at the beginning of the month. So now we have only $115 to go to finish off Shirley's Wisconsin challenge. And my goodness gracious, wouldn't it be nice to finish that up? PayPal button, of course, headonradionetwork.com. And if you prefer to go via the traditional U.S. Postal Service route, the mailing address is down there as well.
Devin has joined us.
Hey, good evening, Devin.
Hello. Blair. Yeah, I was going to say he doesn't trust that Noah.
Oh, dear God. He trusts the one in Genesis.
What weather service does he use to fly?
Lick his finger and stick it out the window.
Yeah, I was going to say the I Ching, but that's probably a little bit too complex for him. But these people, more and more, every year we're going to see a little bit more that what a threat they pose.
Well, every time the media lets them get to the microphone, you just look at them, and whether it's climate change or anything else, they're open their mouths, they're lying. I mean, why is it they give the microphone to the stupidest people in Congress? They just blabber and run their mouths.
I guess because it makes good copy. No, I think the real reason is, and this was, you know, this was work that was done by people like Flimball, who said that, who hollered liberal bias in the media so long and so hard that now if the right wing are not given prominence of place to espouse their stupidity, well, that's just further proof that there's a liberal media bias, right?
Well, I look at it as like every time Michelle Bachmann steps to the microphone, I just think, what is she going to, stupid thing is she going to say now? I mean, she just makes up shit. Somebody tells, puts it in one ear and it comes out the mouth. I mean, somebody's feeding this stupidity in their ear. I mean, don't you think?
Well, yeah, but there's the point is there's a market for it.
Because of the base, right?
Yeah.
It's a positive feedback loop, except it's not so positive.
It just drives me nuts.
Every
news show, it's like on MSNBC, it's, well, here, we're going to play an idiot. Listen to the idiot, and then we'll go from there.
And I guess the scariest part of it all, guys, is that we're not having less idiots. We're getting more of them.
And, I mean, even MSNBC is contributing it to it.
You're talking about Morning Joe?
Yeah. Well, any of them.
But No, go ahead, Devin.
I don't think we're getting more idiots. I think they're just coming out of the woodwork.
Well, but more of them are on the verge of getting elected. Consider this. You remember Joni Ernst, who's been running a campaign ad in Iowa talking about how she grew up on a farm castrating pigs, so she knows how to cut pork in Washington?
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
yeah, that's what Natalie, her commercial reminded me of that.
Well, see, Natalie's commercial reminded me of Joe assassinating the cap and trade bill. I personally think she's got the same media company.
Yeah. Well, or the health care bill.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is that, too.
So, Joni Ernst has a significant chance of becoming a senator from the state of Iowa. All right, let's just deal with that. She recently declared, and this was over at the Daily Beast, she declared, you know, we've talked about this at the state legislature before, nullification. But bottom line is, as U.S. Senator, why should we be passing laws that the states are considering nullifying? Bottom line, our legislators at the federal level should not be passing those laws. We're right. We've gone 200-plus years of federal legislators going against the 10th Amendment states' rights. We're way overstepping bounds as federal legislators. So bottom line, no, we should not be passing laws as federal legislators, as senators or congressmen, that the states would even consider nullifying. Bottom line. Now, we're talking about a woman who's probably going to be in the United States Senate and doesn't understand that the very concept of nullification is not only unconstitutional, but idiotic. We fought a war 150 years ago over nullification and slavery and states' rights. And this woman still thinks it's in play.
It's in play if they make it in play.
I mean, when we pass laws here in West Virginia about EPA water regulations, that's nullification. It's illegal. And it's gone. Various forms of nullification have been running around this country, like and. Pardon the analogy, a wildfire. Jesus. It's frustrating.
Well, they've always been hazardous or even dangerous. But now they're just plain deadly. I mean, they're stacking up bodies, you know, at an unbelievable rate at this point. And I mean, you know, it's starting to remind me of that drowning pool song, you know, Bodies. You know, it's just.
There are so many different examples, and they don't all necessarily come from the same place. I think climate change denial is going to wind up being toxic. I mean, you know, really deadly. But there are other just more garden variety, and it's a pity that it's garden variety, Devin. But take, for instance, the judge in Louisville, Kentucky. A woman by the name of Judge Sandra McLaughlin had before her a young man of color, and you know, she was taking his plea or something, and she looked at him and she said, well, you know, the t-shirt doesn't help. And then as he walked away, having been arraigned on some sort of course drug charges, you know, because that's what this country does, war on drugs, she muttered, you know, he's lucky to get out of here alive. Did you see his shirt? Barack Obama, let's do it again. That was a double whammy. In other words, kind of confessing that she dealt with him as she did because of the way he was dressed, because he had the temerity to come before her in the clothes he was probably wearing when he was arrested with a Barack Obama t-shirt on.
Yep.
And that's just one. She accused another defendant of color he was accused of burglary. She said, well, you're only here in front of me because you're selling dope to little children. And he still needs to burglarize so he can maintain his drug habit. the entire case against the guy was later dismissed. And then there's the guy in New Hampshire, one of your neighbors, Jeremy. This guy's almost paler than me. His name is Representing Kyle Tasker. And he apparently objects to there being a black caucus.
In New Hampshire.
Yeah. And so he says, well, how do I join the white caucus of state legislators? Caucuses are merely groups of people with, well, never mind. So he says, then he finishes up and he goes further and he says, well, I ought to be able to join the black caucus because I'm fond of rap music.
Hey, at meat desk.
Yeah, I know. Try to take it easy because there's a lot of those moments. Yeah, Larry.
Okay. So, Bob, did you know that there is a network of spiritual progressives, and they put out a magazine? It's Rabbi Michael Lerner. I just got my new issue today, and I look at it.
By spiritual, you mean some religious of some sort? Yes.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's, and one of the articles in it that I'm looking at on the front page, the actual article is called Thinking Anew About God. In other words, essays by progressive people that have some kind of notion of what they think God is. And then the article here is called Neoliberalism Versus the Radical Imagination. So apparently what they're saying is that neoliberalism is opposed to the radical imagination.
Oh, I have no doubt of that. The other, for instance, I read a brilliant article from. Where did it come from? Why am I echoing?
Because I've got my.
Larry.
Yeah. Okay.
Beth posted this, and I read it last night. It was an Esquire article on the doctor who basically rides a circuit from Alabama to Mississippi and several other places. He performs abortions. And if you want to read some, if you just want to read some damn good reporting, this is a good piece of writing. But beyond that, one of the things he says is that these people protesting outside the clinic are protesting because they're Christians and they're opposed to abortion. What blows their mind and what they don't understand is that I perform abortions because I'm a Christian. And this goes to the heart of an argument that I've made in the past, and that is that if Christianity is going to be defined in this country as anything other than the hate-filled, bizarre, literalist, weird, twisted fundamentalism that it is, then the people who are Christians and are liberal or progressive need to get really damned loud and start talking about how the other side ain't. Needs to be some excommunicating going on. Does that make any sense?
Well, not to me, because I'm not into religion at all.
Well, I get that.
Well, I moved my iPad away from my chest, so I think that anytime I have the iPad close to my mouth. Really close to my face, I think it echoes. Anyway, and if there's some confirmation from people in the chat room that have iPads, I'd like to get some confirmation on that. Of course,
John Fox refers to it as an iPod.
Yeah, iPod.
I refer to it a maxi pad.
Yeah, my sense is that because of the way religion has been perverted, and because of the way religion has been used to justify all kinds of nasty things in the world and all kinds of distorted thinking, that would be a good reason to be an atheist or an atheist. But there are some times when rationality doesn't go far, doesn't doesn't go far enough, or you can use rationality to close off. Well, I don't know. I don't want to go any further with this, but that's what I feel. You know, there's just some situations that happen in life that are far too, that can't be answered using rational, you know, have to go beyond rational thought, I guess.
But there are, you know, there are people out there who are perfectly decent human beings who are Christians. And when I go after Christianity, that's not who I'm going after. I'm going after the Christianity that is dominant in this country. And that is the loud, whiny, literalist, evangelical, fundamentalist brand that has gone out and redefined the brand itself. Now, if people don't want that to be the brand as it is, the definition of the brand, then they're the one. I can't do it because I'm not a Christian. But other people can. And they're the one, and if they want it to be anything but the way that it is perceived, then they need to get noisy about it and make sure that we get that alternative definition. Oh, and by the way, big thanks going out to Gary, labor man. Thank you, Gary, so very much. Gary finished off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening, which is a really, really big deal. Because by the time we got to the end of the program on Tuesday, we were already in a $200 hole. Wednesday put us in another one, another 150. Then we got it. And so starting off August okay is a really, really big deal. And thank you, Gary. Thank you, labor man, so very, very much. I guess we're pretty much anything else before we wrap, Sparky?
No, if you want to wrap, you can go long. I mean, there's no Malloy tonight. It's a rerun.
Yeah, but I think I was having
it's
some
up to you.
Well, I was having some side communications with John Fox, and I think he and I need to go over some technical stuff.
Okay,
it's been needing addressed. But of course, is the group just going to keep going, and the bat signal go out, and the Horn Malloy Skype chat group will be going for a while?
The rest of the night.
I was going to say, probably into the wee small hours of the morning, up to and including sunrise in certain parts of the globe.
Sometimes I try not to get there, but we've been known to do that.
It has happened.
Especially when Scott and Squeeden came in.
Oh, that's cool.
just want to let people know in the chat room that that's not a figurative statement. We literally do go to sunrise in some parts of the country and of the world too,
and beyond.
And
yes.
Beyond. All right, gang, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful weekend. Maybe I'll catch up with you a little bit later in the evening.
Okay.
All right. Good night, Bob.
Good night, y'all.
Thanks, Bob.
And thus we wrap up another Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks, one and all, for your participation, however it is you do it. Sometimes you just sit and listen. Other times you email. Sometimes you call in. Sometimes it's the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and we have a whale of a good time in the chat room. Thank you, one and all. Thanks very much to those of you who helped out with the two funding challenges this evening. That was huge. That was mightily important, and it is much appreciated. Again, I think next week should be an ordinary broadcast week. There may be a couple of hiccups. I will post on Facebook and Twitter if that is the case. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And ACHEACT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T .org. That's where you go if you want to be part of the struggle to end mountaintop removal. The ACHEACT, H.R. 526 in the House of Representatives, as it is presently designated and desperately needed in the Senate, is the only bill currently pending with the power to end mountaintop removal. If you want to end mountaintop removal, you need to be behind the ACHEACT. And always, 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 Gina, It's all for you. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.